Charles.
The following program is an encore presentation of The Exchange.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. My guest in the studio today, Wilson Savoie, is an incredibly talented, I'll say that twice, talented young man, and has a ton of energy, which a lot of people know Wilson with the bands, the Savoie Family Band, the Pine Leaf Boys, with the band Kubion, which they did win a Grammy, and that's with Wayne Toop, Steve Riley, and then with his mom, too, and Anne Savoie and her Sleepless Nights. But Wilson also has done a lot of work with filmmaking, both with concert videos, with documentaries, helping people out with promotion, has done some great things with Steve Riley, with accordion instructional videos, and also Mitch Reed with fiddle instruction, and then himself. And if he doesn't have enough of his energy going into those things, Wilson has also been rehabbing some homes in the area, which is a cool thing, and putting them into commerce, and creative with his hands, what comes out of his mouth, words, music, all kinds of things. So welcome, Wilson.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here today. I'm curious, and we're going to talk about music first, but some of the things we're going to talk about today is with you and your piano. Mm-hmm. And was that your first instrument?
Piano's my first, around 10 years old, I guess.
Yeah. Can you do you have a sense of when that all came to be for you?
Well, when I was a kid, the movie Great Balls of Fire came out
with Jerry Lee
Dennis
Lewis.
Quaid. Yeah. Yeah, he was playing the role of Jerry Lee Lewis. And I watched that video when I was like 8, and it was so cool because, like, here's a guy from Louisiana. He was insane. He'd set the piano on fire. He'd jump on top of the piano while it was burning down.
Which is a cool thing for a kid to see, besides,
like, wow,
the music part of
right.
it. Yeah.
And I was surrounded by Cajun music. And as a kid, I wasn't that interested in Cajun music because that's just what was always around. I wanted to do something different. I've always wanted to do something different than the norm. The Cajun music was the norm at the time. And so I wanted to play rock and roll piano. That's all I wanted to do, play rock and roll piano. And I didn't have any guidance, really, until I discovered a cousin of mine, Jason Savoie, who claims he's the son of Jerry Lee Lewis, like the illegitimate son.
Really?
Yeah. And he's, when you hear him, and he's from Mamou, when you hear him play, he sounds, he even looks like Jerry Lee Lewis. So you'd think of it could be true. But he'd come over every now and then as a kid and really be inspiring to that.
Were your age? Were you guys pretty close in age?
No, he's a lot older. He's probably about 20 years older than I am.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
And we don't have much in common except that we both love Jerry Lee Lewis. And he's a lawyer, actually.
Yeah.
And but crazy guy. And so I just started playing piano. I took lessons, like classical music and all that, but I wasn't interested in playing at the time. I didn't want to play Beethoven because, once again, everyone did that in piano lessons. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do rock and roll music, and they don't teach that. Nowhere in Eunice can you take rock and roll piano lessons, right?
Yeah.
So I had to teach myself. And my dad got me some homespun videos, which were kind of helpful, VHS videos, how to play. This is before YouTube and all those kind of things. And learned a lot from that, learned a lot by ear.
Who were the tapes of when you got those?
They were just some local, some guys up north who studied piano. I don't think they were anybody famous. They just studied how to play, how to teach.
Yeah, I found some stuff. Was it these guys that Pete Johnson and Albert Amont? Does that ring a bell?
Seems like I know those names. But
there was some interview that, maybe it was your mom did the interview or something. Huh. Okay, yeah. But you but it was more kind of a boogie-woogie style?
Boogie-woogie, rock and roll, right. Just kind of like Barrel House, like playing by yourself. Like rocking really heavy left. I'm left-handed, so it's very heavy left-hand piano. And then playing melody and eventually singing. Singing is very important in that style. And I was so shy and so embarrassed to sing as a kid. And if I was trying to sing and somebody would walk in a room, boy, I'd get so embarrassed. And I felt as if they saw me naked, you know.
It's
very timid in that regard.
It's a very personal thing, singing is.
As a kid, especially. Yeah. Now I'm fine with it. But back then, I guess I was more like self-conscious of it. You know? And, but I got over that quickly when I started with Cajun music, helped me get over that fear, right? So, but I didn't just start playing Cajun music until I was about 18.
So did you play in anything like in school? Like would you do any kind of school productions with the piano?
Yeah.
At all?
You know, I was kind of I wasn't popular in school. Nobody really cared about what I was up to in school. And it wasn't until they found out – we used to have these Day of Recollections, which was terrible. They'd lock you in a room in a building and make you like think. I went to a Catholic school. And it wasn't much. They would just let you pray all day long. And of course, none of these like 15-year-old kids are going to pray all day long, but they leave you on your own to do it. And there was a piano in there.
Oh,
and when I played that Barrow House piano for a bunch of 15-year-olds from that day on.
So you weren't by yourself. You were with
the
group.
No, it was like a whole class. It's a very small school, about 30 people. When I played piano for them, never forget, from that day on, they respected me and they thought I was a cool guy, you know. And I guess the climax of that was one day during a pep rally, once the principal found out I played piano, it was something different because it was a school that was run by sports. If there was no such thing as football, the school wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Hasn't changed. But once they found out that I played piano, during the pep rally, they rolled me out. The piano had wheels on it. They rolled the piano in the middle of the gym in front of about 350, 400 people and let me play Great Balls of Fire.
Oh, fabulous.
And that was probably one of the most, like, if I think, like, cinematic scene of my life, that would be the scene right there when they roll me out and I'm playing Great Balls. I'm like a little shy kid. And I just had to say, you know what? Don't be shy. Just get out there and do it. And once again, that was like definitely separated me from the rest of the football jocks and allowed me to they encourage my, I guess, my pursuit of doing something different.
That's,
you know?
Right.
And then from then on, anything I showed interest in, everyone else would kind of jump on board. I started a chess club at school. Everyone loved that. And things like that that were not normally considered cool. But for some reason, because of the piano and because of my interest in that, it allowed me to do other things like start a chess club. And then I had football players who were interested in chess, which is unheard of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's you know, because that's a tough time in school. I mean, it's tough to try to figure your way
right.
And how do you fit in and where you don't, you know?
Right.
During
the lunch break, I would go and the priest who was there, he would give me a key to the this room where there was a piano in the gym. It was locked in. And while I was playing, I could hear people were lifting weights in the floor above me because the weight center was right above it in the gym. And they'd be stomping their feet and like clapping their hands. And I was like, I was learning at that point how to play piano. Never forget that. And the coaches loved it. They would, you know, they like country music. And it was just cool to get, I guess, get recognition like, hey, you know, there's that guy. Hey, we like your piano playing.
That's
to hear
right.
that from guys you kind of look up to.
Exactly.
Even though they're coaches, I wasn't much interested. They were still kind of the cool guys, you know.
Yeah.
And it helped a lot as a kid. I was the only one doing that. And it kind of helped me to say, you know, it's better to do something different. It kind of separates
right.
you from the rest, you know. And now I see a lot of these guys that were into football and, they, you know, their lives have gone kind of a very normal, straight way, whereas mine's just been all over the place because of my – I guess I just wanted to do something different.
Exactly.
I've always wanted to do it.
Was there a piano in your parents' house when you first were interested?
My dad got a piano when I was a kid, and he had to reinforce the floor underneath the house. I think the house we grew up in was like the seventh generation.
Old
house, about 200-something years old. And he got this huge piano. And one thing funny about the piano that he got for us was it was tuned a step and a half low. So in other words, when I hit a C chord on that piano, you would hear an A chord. So I had to learn how to play in the key of E flat in order to play with the C accordion. It was
That's interesting.
Isn't that weird? So,
yeah.
And also, it was kind of a weird. So anytime I wanted to play piano, I had to be in either to go with the accordion, would either be B flat or E flat in order to play in the key of C or G.
But boy, it teaches you a lot about music theory. I mean, you know.
It did, especially.
Forces
it
you
helped
to
a lot
that.
When I got into Ray Charles music because everything he did was in E flat and B flat and A flat.
Ah.
So because of this weird piano that we had, I don't know if that's serendipitous to say, but it had a lot to do with that piano. And the fact that I was already kind of playing in those keys, that kind of helped me later on when I got into soul music and gospel music.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, then the accordion, did you have an interest to pick it up or was there some nudging too? Come on.
No nudging at all. My dad built me an accordion as a gift and he gave it to me when I was about 13 years old. It was, I guess it was like the Cajun bar mitzvah accordion, you know. It was like, here you go, you're coming of age, here's an accordion. And when I turned 8, I didn't care about it at the time. I mean, you know, I was interested in the piano. That's what I was interested in. When I moved to Baton Rouge to go to school at LSU, I brought the accordion as an ornament, basically. It would sit on the shelf.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, hey, here's a cool accordion. It's just like a shelf, a bookend.
Yeah, yeah.
And one morning, I tell the story, and it sounds like so made up, but it's 100% true, that I woke up and, like, I wasn't very interested in school. I didn't really know what I was doing there. I just had TOPS, like everyone else had TOPS, this little scholarship that helped pay for tuition. And I saw the accordion, and I was very homesick at the time for Eunice and for my parents. And so I took the accordion and started kind of tinkering with it. And I knew all the tunes because it's just like the way I know English. I knew the tunes because I grew up with it.
Yeah,
you have to know the tunes the same way we learn English. I never had to learn them. I just grew up with it. And I took the accordion outside, started playing it. And once again, I noticed that like cute girls and such were interested in like another weird thing. Here's a guy, you know, while everyone else is like playing lacrosse, whatever the heck they play over at Frisbee, I was playing accordion. So it's like a little weird thing to separate me. And then I got this girlfriend at the time, and she was really into the accordion. And then I got addicted to the accordion. I mean, that was like one, if I had to pick one of three things in my life I've ever been addicted to, it was playing the accordion. I didn't care about anything else. I mean, I could go to a boucherie or a jam session, and I would plant myself. I wouldn't talk to anybody. I would plant myself in a chair and play for 7-8 hours.
Wow.
And just go crazy. I mean, to me, that was the coolest thing. I mean, I would get excited. When I first started coming to Lafayette, Harold Bernard had this Cajun jam session over at Chris's Po' Boys.
Chris's Po' Boys, yeah, sure. Yeah,
which is now Pamplona.
Yeah.
And every time I go to Pamplona, I like to think about those days. I was living in Baton Rouge. My friend Jacques Fontenot would drive me over. I didn't drink at all until I was about 21 or 22. So as an 18, 19-year-old kid, I was coming over to this jam session. And to me, even thinking back gives me chills. Like, you walk in this building and all of your heroes that you've been listening to, like Steve Riley and Christine Balfa, you name it, they're all there just jamming, sitting around.
That was around. A great.
That was like when the jam was so good. And I would sit down and, man, I wouldn't even want to play. Because, honestly, I would just kind of sit and listen. And then when they all left, I'd sit down and play a few. But that was really, really, really great. And then I'd go back to Baton Rouge that night, get back like at 3 in the morning. I'd miss class. I didn't care about school anymore at this point. I'd miss class, and I'd wake up the next morning and I'd say, I cannot wait till next week, next Wednesday.
And
finally, I moved here to Lafayette not long after. I couldn't take it anymore. I was too far away from Lafayette. Yeah.
So what do you think the difference was with the accordion? I mean, being that focused. Versus like the piano, and maybe it had to do with age too. I don't know.
Well, the emotion that I felt from the people I was listening to, I was really influenced by Amadei Ardoin, Ai Religion. And when you listen to them singing, you can't help but feel almost a nostalgic part of your past, even though that happened 30, 40 years before you were even born. The style of singing was so powerful, and I wanted to be a part of that. Amadei Ardoin, then like 30 years later, Ai Religion. That was all the Irie was in the 50s. I wasn't born until the 80s, but I really, really connected. And I felt that there was a loss for that in modern day music. It wasn't there anymore. Everything was overproduced. The singing styles, it just didn't do it for me. And I just really had a weird nostalgia for this like 1950s sound, and especially 1920s. And I just wanted to do that. And I couldn't do it until at first I had all the heartbreak and all these things, you know.
So
I had to go through all that, I guess, at first. And with each heartbreak and those kind of things and things that happen, I was able to kind of, I guess, transform. It helped me a lot to get through all that, especially Hank Williams music. This is something different, of course. But with country music, all those tunes helped me get through these hard moments in my life.
Yeah. Where did I read? God, Wilson, it was just when I was looking up things about you that somebody said, you know, people really enjoy the music or get into it. When life is good, they really enjoy the music. When life is bad, they really understand the lyrics. Yeah, I just read that in the last couple of days.
I can relate to
but
that.
But you do, yeah.
And that's what's interesting about Cajun music. And another reason I was so drawn to it. I was drawn to it also because, my parents played it, as you know, they're very well known in the Cajun music scene. So playing it in Baton Rouge and all that was a way to kind of reconnect with my roots. Of course, I was only 18. It's not like I had left them behind for so long.
Yeah, but you know what was cool, though, is you took your own route there.
Right. Well, at first, it was very traditional. I started out very traditional. I wanted to be Ai Religion. I wanted to be Jason Fry from Eunice. I wanted to be my dad. I wanted to play like those guys. And then as I started going with it, I was still had the rock and roll influence from piano. And I felt I was not I was being untrue to myself if I didn't allow, if I felt I had to hinder myself from doing what was coming naturally, if I felt like I had to, if you listen to my earlier CDs, I tried to sound like a 95-year-old man when I sang. Yeah, yeah. I would like purposely, yeah, I die when I talk, you know, and I was like, I was trying to do the whole Cajun thing because that's what I loved and that's what I listened to. But finally I said, you know, I got to just be who I am. If I'm influenced by this, I got to let it flow. So finally, we started, you know, allowing Cajun music to go the route of rock and roll. Yeah. And if I didn't, then I wouldn't have been being true to myself. And I think the band would not have lasted as long as it has still. It's been around for 11 years
with
now.
With the Pine Leaf Boys. Pine Leaf, yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, why don't we listen? We're going to switch up a little bit. As long as we're talking about the Pine Leaf Boys, can we listen to that cut, mm-hmm, that you brought in? And this is Danser you brought in.
Yeah, we got that one. We also got I Got a Camel. That's they're both real fun. Whichever one you want to do.
Let's do the one from that's right. That is the Pine Leaf Boys.
I Got a Camel is a kind of a good, you hear like rock and roll singing mixed with Zydeco accordion styles. So there's a big old, we call it cross pollination, which think in order to be a traveling band nowadays, you have to cross pollinate.
Was Cedric with the band at this one?
This was actually recorded this year.
Oh, that
Cedric
was this
left
year.
The band in 2008.
Yeah,
so it's been a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so Courtney's in the band.
Yeah, this is track 4, I think. Yeah.
All right, this is the Pine Leaf Boys, and this is I Got a Camel.
We'll be right back.
All right. Pine Leaf Boys with our guest today in the studio, if you're just joining us, musician Wilson Savoie. 11 years already for the Pine Leaf Boys. Wow.
Well, you know how we started, right?
It yeah, I do. But go ahead and tell the story.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to get into a lot of detail because we are in the exact
because
spot.
It had to do with the university.
Yeah, it had. I mean, it's a great thing that happened. If it hadn't happened, this event, Pine Leaf Boys and my would have never have happened.
Yeah.
I used to live across the street on Lamar over there in Lamar University. Right there, you could walk from the campus of UL, and we weren't even students, but it was just really garbage of a house right over there. And we'd play, we'd come to the campus and play music, try to make a few dollars to buy a pizza.
Yeah.
But we were playing old-fashioned Cajun music. All the students were loving it. And one day, a policeman came and said, y'all got to get off the campus. You're disturbing the peace. And this is like, you know, we're like in the most obscure spot. Maybe and there's like people driving by blaring loud music. And, you know, you could barely even hear it. But and I was so offended by that. Like, I'm thinking, here we are trying to run the Raging Cajun campus, trying to keep the music alive, doing what we can, you know. And this guy comes and tells us we've got to get out. So I took it, great offense to that, and went home and got on my computer and wrote a letter to every single newspaper. I sent it out, just blasted every editor I could find in Lafayette and even beyond, even to Baton Rouge. And thinking that maybe one might write it. And I think every single one printed it.
Yeah, I remember
and,
that.
And they put a picture of us in the paper. And it was like the day the music died.
Yeah.
And it was like a picture of us looking all sad and having our hand in our chins, looking all sad. No more instruments in our hand. Like, we really milked that for what it was. And people like all these other local venues were like, you know what? If they're not going to let you play on campus, come play for us. And we're going to invite you to play at our bar. And then within a year of that, we got so motivated, inspired, I guess, an ambitious by that event turned in, you know, what's the Chinese word? There's no Chinese word for crisis. It's just opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so
right.
Within a year, we made a CD and had an agent, and I think we were going on our first tour of Europe.
Isn't that fabulous?
And if that moment never happened, it's a bad thing of getting kicked off campus. But that was 11 years ago.
Yeah, fabulous. Yeah. You know, and I didn't mention when I forgot how it has come first full circle is that I don't know if you still are, but you've taught quite a few semesters, quite a few years.
I was the first teacher at UL in Cajun Music Ensemble, which I thought was very ironic, and that's why I did it.
Yeah.
When they invited me to come back years later, Mark DeWitt, who's in charge of the Cajun Music Department Ensemble here at UL, where you can actually get a degree in Cajun music. How you like that?
Yeah, isn't that great?
That is like, I mean, I would have never have thought that was going to happen. You can get a degree in Cajun music or Cajun accordion. And so I was invited almost as goodwill to come back and teach the ensemble and then later on teach accordion for credit at UL. And I wasn't going to do it because I still held a grudge about it all. But I thought, you know what? This is a great opportunity to come back. And, you know, this is great that they're doing this, young people, to inspire young people to play Cajun music. And I think I can maybe do a pretty good job with it. And I did it for about a couple of years, probably 2 years, maybe 2.5, 3 years.
Had you taught prior to that?
I've taught a lot.
Not
at UL. A lot of camps over the world, a lot in France and a lot in Canada and all over the country, West Virginia and New York.
And then here taught at Folk
and here,
Roots.
Different things like that. Yeah, so I've done that. And I've made a few DVDs and I've things like that. So I enjoy teaching to some extent. If I can, but it all depends on the student, of course.
Yeah.
If the student is being forced to do it, or they don't really know how to, you know, it's very important the way they come in ready to learn. It's like my dad says, if they come in and they don't even, if they can't even hum the tune, hum a song in Cajun music or whistle it, then there's no way they'd be able to. I can't teach them how to hum a tune.
Yeah,
it's like my dad saying, it's like you buying a typewriter and you can't spell any words. It's the same logic.
Sure.
It's like, teach them how to type. Well, do you know how to spell? No.
No.
Yeah. Same kind of thing. So I love it when a student comes in and they know the music. They just simply can't make it come out of their fingers.
Yeah.
That's the only way I want to teach somebody.
With the now you play piano, you play accordion, you play fiddle.
Fiddle.
You play bass.
Well, I play with other instruments, but my main three are piano, accordion, and fiddle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you see a difference in maybe the way that you had to teach or what the students were looking for in this program versus, you know, like camps that you've taught at?
Yeah, I mean, I've done different camps, and no matter where you are, it depends where you are, I guess, in the world. In some places, they want you to literally write push button 5, pull button 6, pull button 7. And I'll try to teach them, and I'm there for a week, And after 2 or 3 days, if I see that nobody's learning and that's what they want, if they want me to write down push 5, pull 6, I'm going to tell them, look, I can do this for you. That's really all you want. And you're the one who paid the tuition to come here. But that's, you're not going to sound like a Cajun musician. You know, that's not how it works. You got to take a CD and go back to your dorm or whatever it is, your bunker, and listen to this music. Just listen to it. That's all you got to do. You don't need to do anything else. You shouldn't even touch the accordion until you have that music, like until you've logged 1,000 hours of listening to music. And that goes with any, that goes with art. It doesn't matter if you're painting, if you're doing sculptures. It doesn't matter if you're doing music. You shouldn't touch any of the tools it takes to make those, that kind of art, until you have it, until you've studied it. And study could just be simply looking at a painting on the wall or looking how they did it, or listening to music, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I think, yeah. I mean, I've always felt that way. And all the musicians that I'm so inspired by are the ones that learned that exact way. They didn't even touch the thing until they had it up in their head first. And then they felt they can chance. And by the time they did pick up the paintbrush or the accordion, whatever it might be, they were immediately good.
Well, and then, you know, in what I hear you describing during that learning process is generally then when people take in that emotional part of it.
Right.
You know, they begin to feel whatever that art is.
And you'll miss that. That's, to me, is the most important part of the whole learning process, is getting the emotion of what was being conveyed by this art, whatever it might be. Like I said, when I listen to Ira Lejeune or Amadi Ardwin, them crying, screaming and crying in the microphone. Same thing with a painting, you know. If I just pick up a brush and have no idea what I'm doing, I'm missing 99% of the emotion it took that actually goes into painting. Same thing with music. And it is art. All this stuff is like it's an expression. I guess it's almost an extension of who you are, that you're conveying and putting it out there for people to enjoy.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of emotion, I saw you we were talking about this a little earlier, off the air, actually. But I saw you at Festival Carayans this year at Creole. And you were doing a workshop with Rick Lanyo and Eric Adcock and on different piano styles, because y'all play differently. But you went into this piece where you just talk, and it was just such an emotional experience for me to watch what was coming out of you at that time. And although you talk about how addicted you got and that emotional connection to the accordion, boy, is it there with you and the piano.
But the piano is my baby.
Yeah.
I mean, of any instrument, there would never be a piano.
Yeah.
That's the one that my first love. It's like your first love in your life, like the first kiss. You'll never forget that
exactly.
one. And piano's like that with me. And not just – even if it hadn't been, it's the only instrument, in my opinion, but it is the truth, regardless of whose opinion it is. It's got – you can play 10 notes at one time if I want to. I can self-accompany my right hand with my left hand. It's the most versatile instrument. It's just an incredible, incredible, incredible instrument. And I always feel sorry for people when they don't play any piano.
Yeah.
You know, they play fiddle, which is a beautiful instrument, very hard to do. But if you don't play piano, which is like the godfather, everything's relatable to the piano.
Yeah.
When you look at music being taught, they always point at the piano. They point to piano notes. It's just such a great instrument. Yeah.
Well, you've started to do a little bit more focus back on the piano again in your life, and you brought in some cuts. Should we do the first one here?
We can do this one. I recorded this. I'm working on a solo project where it's just tunes that I love. Some of them I've written. Some of them I've just liked the words, whatever. And I've recorded this one. This is not the final product. It's still kind of a work in progress, but. What I do, I'm doing it from my house now, and so I'll lay down an electronic drum. I know it sounds kind of wacky.
No,
I'll lay down an electronic drum, and once I'm totally finished and everything's good, then I'll get a real drummer to come in and overdub on there. I've tried doing it other ways before, and this is one way I can actually fine-tune exactly what my ideas are, and then later on, instead of wasting a drummer's time. So this track here, you'll hear that, you'll hear that the drums are electronic. Most people probably wouldn't have even noticed that.
No, they won't.
But anyway, it's a great tune I learned from this guy named Buddy Miller, who's a singer-songwriter, and also George Strait recorded it. And it's a great tune. I love it. It's all about the life of a musician, how when you travel, the things you're leaving back at home, it's like it's one of the lines is all there is to a showman's life is a lonely wife in a hotel room. And, I can relate to that kind of thing because it is hard sometimes to travel. And I don't travel as much as I used to. But that is one of the hardest parts about being a musician, is leaving behind the thing you love, which it's Lafayette, it's your family here, it's all the cool stuff we have here. But it's a necessity if you're going to be a musician. That's why I love this tune.
Exactly. All right. This is Wilson Savoy, and this is Showman's Life.
A showman's life is a smoky bar, and a fever chase of a tattered star. It's a hotel room with a lonely wife is all there is to a showman's life. Nobody told me about this part. They told me all about the pretty girls and wine and money and good time, but no mention of all the wear and tear on an old told me about this part. Oh, boy, we'll dream as children do of a great white wave till the dream comes true. It's a funny smile in a colored light. Oh, all I've seen of a showman's life. Nobody told me about this part. They told me all about the pretty girls and the wine and the money and good times. Nobody told me about this part.
All right. right. That was Wilson Savoy, and that was Buddy Miller's tune, Showman's Life. If you just joined us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. We are public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette right here at Cypress Lake Studios. And as always, a tip of the hat to everybody who continues to support us throughout the year. And you can do that, not just during our couple times during the year where we do some pledging, but there's a great donate button, red button on the website that you can do that. And we appreciate it. It helps us get all the different national programs as well as help out with a lot of the locally produced programs that we have. Another great way to find out about what's happening here at KRVS is Facebook through KRVS Public Media. As I said earlier, if you're just joining us, my guest in the studio today is musician Wilson Savoy, and musician is only one part of his life, but it's the one we're talking about right now. But we talked about you kind of taking a bit more of a focus back on piano. I'm curious, have you ever performed solo?
I'll do a few little parties here and there. Somebody wants like jazz music, you know, I'll sit down and play some solo piano. I like it.
Will you sing too?
I do.
Yeah. I mean, as you're doing the solo gigs.
Solo, I do. Yeah, I sing. And I like it a lot when I'm not. Like, if I'm going to do a solo gig, solo meaning I'm just by myself,
yeah,
like
exactly.
No one else.
Yep.
I like it more when I'm just kind of in a corner doing my own little thing. I don't want people watching me. They got a few venues around Lafayette that I like a lot. And, you know, you can put a little keyboard or a piano in a corner and everyone's doing their own thing. And I can sit back there and have a little, you know, whiskey sour and play some piano and sing. I love it.
You're good. That's it.
I love it. It's great. So I'll do that every now and then. It's a good way to get out the house and go play some music and meet some cool people, you know.
Yeah. You, in terms of writing for you now on the piano, is it taking a different direction, let's say, in the last 6 months or year than maybe what you were focused on piano, I don't know, 4 years ago in terms of the style you're writing or the songs that are coming out?
I'm writing some, but there's so much great stuff that's already been written that a lot of people have never heard before.
Okay.
And it's so great, and I love to play them. And so I've spent the last, like, many, many, many years of my life just learning how to play those songs, you know what I mean? Not focusing on writing. It's kind of sometimes one or the other. If you're going to focus on your singing and focus on your playing, it's good to already have a tune that's out there that you like, that you've heard a really great version of. And there's a lot of Ray Charles stuff I like a lot. And so I've tried to do some of those. And but as far as writing, I have written a few. And one of the fun ones I've done, you know, Danny DeVillier,
sure.
He does this thing called the Mystery Three, where he gets like three mystery guests to come up on stage and play. Well, he asked me to write a tune for that show, and he said, I want you to write it in a genre that you don't usually play in. And so I wrote one called I Want to Be Your Rebound. And I wanted the idea of it because it's just like there's so many love songs and these kind of things, but there weren't too many tunes I'd ever heard before about being a rebound for somebody. And the idea is that even though I'm your rebound, I would do it again,
you know,
because it's so true in the case of many people. And so I wrote that song, I Want to Be Your Rebound, which is going to be one of the tracks on the new CD. In fact, I recorded that one here at KRVS.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. And Roddy Romero played on it. Danny DeVillier played on it.
This is the one we've got right now.
That's number two.
On here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the words are funny. It's just like, and it's in the style, in my and my attempt to sound like an 80s Bruce Springsteen rock star.
Well, let's listen to that. All right. This is Wilson Savoy. This is Rebound.
This rebound food. backseat of a Greyhound, Rocky Kingdom, and I leave with a new love found. I want to be your rainbow. I wanna be your rainbow.
All right, Wilson Savoy with a little help from Julie Williams, Danny DeVilliers, and Roddy Romero. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I love it. It was fun. Now that's a cool thing of, you know, and that's what I love about what's going on, especially in the music scene around here. Like some of those different things, like him, like get out of your comfort zone, do something you normally wouldn't do, and then look what comes out of that.
Right.
You know?
And Aaron Thomas, who's an engineer here at KRVS, he's the one who engineered that.
Yeah.
And he has a bunch of great ideas. He was like, why don't you try this? And Roddy came in with this like amp and cranked it up. And I thought for sure we're going to get kicked out of this building because it was right here in KRVS.
Well,
you
know, it wouldn't have been the first time you got kicked off campus. Well.
Yeah, right. I'm getting used to it, right?
Yeah. That's very cool. Very nice. I'm going to switch gears for a minute because the other thing you do, and then we're going to come back to a little bit of the piano music. But I'm intrigued by this. You're spending a lot of time right now creating differently with your hands. You're not playing instruments, but you're playing instruments in terms of the construction world.
Right.
You know? And that's still a part of your creative process, what's coming out of your brain. But I'm curious, where did that come in for you? You know, for starting to look at building things,
right,
creating things from...
Well, in my family, my dad's a builder. He builds accordions. Okay. And that's, you know, building small things. But I've always been interested in much larger structures, like a house.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I moved to Lafayette, I decided to buy a house when I was young because I didn't want to pay rent anymore. And I bought a house that needed some work on Congress Street over there near downtown Lafayette. And I, as a musician, of course, I don't have any money, especially after you buy a house. You're totally broke. And either you learn how to fix something yourself, or you pay someone $10,000 to do it.
Yeah.
You got a broken pipe? Okay, well, you better shell out the money or learn how to do it. And so I went to Barnes & Noble and bought a bunch of books and read everything there is to learn about plumbing, electrical, construction, everything. Then I bought another book. And then I came slightly addicted. This was my second addiction in life, was construction and carpentry. And I would leave the girlfriend at night and go to downtown and just read the library, read about books, and became obsessed with it. And just started building. I started adding on rooms to that house, added on a bathroom. And I told myself, if I can build a bathroom on a house, which has got plumbing, got electrical, got a roof, got walls, got everything in there, if I can do that, then I can build a house. So I built a bathroom, and then my house got broken into. And I said, all right, you know what? I'm tired of living in this neighborhood. I'm done with this. So it was a great thing. Once again, like getting kicked off campus, a bad thing led me to get out of the situation and do something better. I bought some land on the north side of Lafayette, a really nice lot, and decided to build a house there. And spent 9 months doing that.
And doing all the work yourself.
I had Toby Rodriguez. He's a guy who does the boucherie.
Sure.
He's a great, awesome carpenter. He and some of his buddies framed it up for me because I was doing a lot of touring at that time. But when I was home, I'd help. They framed it, and then I finished everything else inside it, the sheetrock, the plumbing, the electrical. And I did it to code inspections, and those guys would come by, and they were great guys and give me advice and tell me if I didn't do it right, they'd tell me how to do it right. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was interested in learning, so I did that. And then since then, that's been 4 years ago since I built that. I'm building another one now in Karen Crow. I just love, and it's Acadian Acadian house. It's, I guess you'd call it modern Acadian. It's an Acadian style house, but I'm using modern day tools and materials to build it, you know, really good insulation and these kind of things. And I love it. Yeah. And
but
now,
you know, it's interesting, though, you took a similar path in what you were describing, you know, before you kind of really attack the art form, you know, with playing the instrument or painting.
Right.
Go study. Go learn. You
know,
you did
lot.
The same thing with this.
Well,
you know?
It's like music in a way that music being the art, you have to study to make it. You have to make it look good.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't just build a box. And it's if you want it to look good, you really got to get out there and do a tour of things that you like that speak to you. So I really love the houses at Vermilionville and Acadian Village. I don't want to build a house that looks like it was built in 1880. I want to build a house that looks like it's built nowadays. But take influences like what the Cajuns, from back then, they knew what they were doing.
That's right.
They would build the house cross ventilation. They'd build the attics large so the attics would stay cooler in the summer. They had a lot of great ideas. So I studied that, which is very interesting to me and still is. And but then you got to make it look good, you know, and you have help. If there's something I lack in, like maybe I'm not good at choosing colors or maybe the layout of the house. Like I must have drawn 20 different layouts of the house I'm living in now until finally I drew the 20th one. I was like, all right, this is a layout that's going to work for only my lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm a single guy living in a house by myself. I like to have a lot of parties. I'm going to build this house for me. There's one bedroom downstairs. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
2,000 square feet with one bedroom. I like to have a big living space. I built it exactly the way I wanted. I've always said if you buy a house that you don't like, first you're buying for something you don't want. You're paying for something you don't want. Second, you're paying to tear it out. And third, you're finally paying the third time to build it the way you want it. Why not just build it from scratch the first time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was my logic. And as a musician with not much money, you have to learn how to do these things yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what I encourage other musicians to do. It's like, you know, you can do it if you learn how to do it yourself. Don't count on anyone else to do these things for you. You have to get out there and do it.
Are you visual? Like, are you able to picture, as you're putting together that plan, as you're sketching out, do you see it first inside or?
I do, but I use a computer. A computer architectural 3D software, and I start drawing out walls and what I imagine. I would go in a house. Like, one thing I did, I would go in a house that I liked a lot. And I'd say, hey, you might have come to your house, Zachary Richard. He's got a beautiful house in Scott.
Yeah.
You might have come to your house and check it out and measure. I like that one room. I want to measure the width and length of it. I like that way that – what's the ceiling height? I'd go in there and figure it out. Different houses, I would do that. And I'd take that information, write it down, and try to transfer that to my house. And I love that idea. It's like these guys have already spent years, architects, they paid a lot of money for these architects. Why not just, you know, what's the quote, good artists create and great artists steal?
Yeah.
Well, just somebody's already taken all the time to figure this stuff out. Just go learn from them, do what they've done, and just copy it over to your place, you know? So as far as on that front.
But then you tweak it, though, to
what
you
need. And then I tweak
it
to my lifestyle, no doubt.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
Listen, let's listen, because I want to get these last two songs in, too.
Mm-hmm.
Should we do As Long As I Live?
It's a good one. Yeah, it's kind of in the style of Jerry Lee Lewis, and I'm playing piano. And Chris Miller from The Revelers is playing saxophone.
Oh, very cool.
And it's just a great Jerry Lee tune that not too many people have ever heard before. I like it. It's just a song, As Long As I Live, Baby, I'm Going to Give All My Love to You.
Very cool. Wilson Savoy, As Long As I Live.
As long as I live, baby, I'm gonna give you all of my heart. We can't be apart. As long as I live, yes, I'm gonna give stars above that shine. Just give me a little more time. I'm gonna make this whole world yours and mine. As long as I live, baby, I wanna see you give your love to nobody but me. As long as I live, I wanna be your one desire. That kiss, the flame burning in your heart like fire. I wanna be your one desire. We'll be right back.
as long as I live. As long as I live, yes, I'm gonna give you all of the stars that shine. Just give me a little more time. I wanna make this whole world yours and mine. Yes, I'm gonna make this whole world yours and mine.
Wilson Savoy, and that was As Long As I Live. Yeah, we just have to get you out there doing a ton of shows playing piano, Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I do want to mention is that Wilson with the Pine Leaf Boys is going to be at Vermilionville for their annual Mardi Gras celebration, and that's on the 31st. And then you can watch for them all around during Mardi Gras time out at Lakeview Artmosphere. Best way to find out about what's happening is go to PineLeafBoys.com. Also, Savoie Family Cajun Band. .com. And just keep checking around to see when he's doing some of his solo things. But, you know, the other thing you've been quite involved in is another way of creating is the film work that you've done. And that's been some concert videos. It's been, like we talked about, some instructional videos. And I know that you talked about you've been working with Wayne Toups on
one. That's how I got to know Wayne. I just called him one day and said, hey, I'm interested in you and your life. Can I make a movie about you? And at first he's like, I don't know. And then I wrote him a idea of what I had. And he's like, let's do it. Can we start tomorrow?
Yeah,
and
so I sold it.
Spent 5-6 years going to visit him.
Wow.
At his house. And it's great. And it's not finished. I don't even really want to finish it, because if it's finished, that means there's no more story to tell. So even though it's finished and I haven't even released it yet, I'm still adding on to it. And I love that. I do a lot of music videos. I did one last year for Fufuli, the band Fufuli, too.
And you did with Corey.
Corey Leday. We did some music videos. So, yeah, it's really fun. I love film work when I'm not building. It's another form of,
I'm curious, what have you learned about music from behind the camera? You realize anything that you've learned that it's like, wow, isn't that interesting? I never thought about that, being a musician, that you've learned watching other people from behind.
From behind the camera? Not so much, because when I'm behind the camera, I'm really focusing on getting the most visual, the best shot I can think of. And so I feel like I'm spending all my energy on that.
So what are you trying to capture with somebody who's playing music? If you're doing a live performance, what are you trying to capture?
It's kind of like when you sing, it's all about the phrasing. Well,
okay.
When you film, it's all about the way you position the camera and the angles and all this and the lighting. Same kind of thing. It's just you have to make sure on the technical side that it's correct. And it's got to look visually good.
Yeah. So what brought that on to get a camera?
I got a camera when I've always loved video cameras. I got a camera because of the digital age we live in. Macintosh, they started promoting video production when I was 18, and I bought a little iMac. There's a little blueberry color iMac.
Yeah, yeah.
And boy, I got so interested in making because we live in a great place, and I want to document the crawfish boil. I want to document the boucherie when they kill a pig. No one else is doing it very well, because they're making a lot of garbage documentaries back then. I thought I could maybe try better, and if not, I'll have fun doing it.
Yeah.
And so I got really into it and prolific as far as making documentaries. And now it's more of a hobby, but I very much enjoy doing it, yeah.
Do you take it when you're on the road? Do you film like you guys, like the Pine Leaf Boys?
We do every now and then, but that's just – I film that with my iPhone. But it's not really interesting enough, I don't think, to to make a documentary
Thomas
and Drew drinking a beer. I don't know if I really want to document that, you know. But, you know, we do blog. I love to blog. So we travel to somewhere crazy like Saudi Arabia or Uzbekistan. We love to blog about the cultures there. That's what I love by writing. I love to blog by writing. I think it's a good way to really convey what we're feeling, being away in this crazy place, you know.
Yeah. Do you read for enjoyment, Wilson? I mean, I know you read to learn.
I read to learn.
And
as
that's
far
a type
as
of enjoyment, but do you just read?
No, I don't. I'll be honest. I mean, it sounds so close-minded. I don't read too much.
Yeah.
I don't either.
Myself. I was just curious.
Yeah. I think in my more of my sunset years, I will probably turn to reading. I know my dad has gone very much into reading Charles Dickens.
Ah.
He loves Charles Dickens. And when he was my age, he could care less about it. So I think I go with what's good with me at the moment. And no, I don't read. I don't read too much for enjoyment right now. I read more to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You, because I mean, boy, I can't believe all the stuff you're involved in. Are people going to have a chance soon, do you think, to see you out performing piano Maybe you and a piano, or you and a couple of
piano,
people?
I play a lot of piano with Pine Leaf.
I know, but the stuff that you're wanting to...
Stuff that I'm doing, I'm still working on it. The closest thing that to that of piano rock like, that I'm doing is with Julie Williams. We love, we do a lot of this stuff, and she's a powerhouse. She's a great musician, great singer. And so we have a lot of fun doing anything from like rock and roll to jazz standards and great repertoire music. And I'm not sure off the top of my head when we're playing again. But I'm sure that's all on Facebook. You can check all that out. You know?
Yeah. It's a good – that's a cool thing. I'd like to see you guys do a really big show.
It's fun to let her kind of run the show, and she's just like, hey, play this one. And I'm like, all right. I can sit in the background. I don't have to worry about running the show. I like that a lot. I can just kind of sit in the back and just do my thing, you know?
Gives you a break from
normally I'm the guy thinking of the songs. You got in the middle. You got to converse with the audience and those kind of things. And I like that's fun too. But I like to sometimes just be the guy in the background. You know,
exactly.
Yeah,
very cool. Well, Wilson, it has been great having you on here today.
Thank you for
having me.
So
glad
we
got you on. Yeah, we're gonna go out. This is you doing a whole lot of shaking.
Right? This is from Jazz Fest this year in New Orleans.
All right, everybody, have a good week, Wilson. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Klein Peter with an invite to join me Thursdays at noon on KRVS 88.7 for Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, Elvis, Carl Perkins, even Dolly Parton.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.